I'm sorry I was late. I hit the tunnel. I thought I left in plenty of time, but the tunnel was backed up for whatever reason. So, but I made it. So, my sobriety day is July 18, 2013. And I have a home group at Shoulder to Shoulder in Yorktown. And we meet on Thursdays. We have a closed big book study in the parish hall. And on Saturdays, we have an open speaker meeting in the parish hall. So if any of y'all are, I know I've seen some of you there, but if you're ever in Yorktown, it's a great meeting. So I'm going to tell you my story, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm from Alabama, born and raised in Alabama, and I have a normal family. I have two parents that stayed married until my father recently passed away. I have two older sisters that don't appear to be alcoholics. My parents aren't alcoholics. They like to drink, but it's very sparingly. My mom might have like a wine cooler every now and then, or if she's feeling crazy, maybe two, or a margarita. My dad liked to have a beer every now and then, but other than that, it's me. So anyway, like I said, I had a great childhood, and you know, I had I went to the same school. I had the same friends 1 through 12 until I graduated. So, you know, I mean, I remember always wanting to fit in and always wanting to be popular and trying to make that happen. And I don't know if that's because I'm an alcoholic or just, you know, just being a kid, but I do remember that. And you can see I'm tall, and so I was kind of taller than everyone else. I didn't have any boyfriends in high school or anything. And the first time that I can remember, and I'm pretty sure it was probably the first time that I got drunk. Not that I drank, I had sips of my, you know, dad's beer or whatever over the years, but I was about 15, and in Alabama we had, I mean, it was like, I don't remember wine coolers before this, but we had 2 liters of wine cooler. It was called Sun Country wine coolers. Did y'all have those here? They were awful, and I drank a lot of that, and I remember I loved it. I had a great time. I threw up all over my friend's parents' bathroom. It was just, I remember red just because it was like fruit punch flavor just coming down the walls, but I loved it, and I couldn't wait to do it again, like a lot of us say. You know, I didn't get a lot of opportunity to do it at that point, but every chance I got, I did. And even early on, I remember making promises to myself that I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't drink again, or to other friends. If I was ever religious, high school was probably it. We had Young Life where I grew up, and I think y'all have that here, but it was a Christian, and we met once a week and would sing and stuff, and I did Bible studies and stuff like that. I was raised in the Lutheran church. My parents were Lutheran, so I was baptized in the Lutheran church, but all my friends were Baptist, so I'd go to church with them, and that kind of clashed with that, but it didn't ever really stop me. I mean, one of the first times that I got drunk, I kissed a boy for the first time, and so I kind of always equated that with, you know, drinking made me beautiful. It gave me confidence and that kind of thing. It was probably between my junior and senior year of high school, I lost a lot of weight. I was kind of chubby up until then. I'm chubby again now, but I'm okay with it today. But, and I lost a lot of weight, and I started getting more attention, and I developed a nice little case of bulimia that got pretty bad. And I tell this, are any of you from Alabama or know anybody from Alabama, when you're born in Alabama, I mean, at birth, you pick a team, Alabama or Auburn, and you stick with that team until the day you die. I mean, that's just how it is. And I always wanted to go to Alabama, and it never was a question that I wouldn't go to Alabama, or my parents wouldn't be able to afford it or anything. I was going to go, and so I did. But my bulimia was really bad, and of course at Alabama I partied a lot, and the bulimia was kind of overtook the drinking at that point, and I finally decided that I needed to get help, and I started seeing a counselor for a little while. I was in Tuscaloosa, and I confided in my parents about it. And that summer before would have been my sophomore year at college, I decided I need to go into treatment. So that was my first experience with a treatment facility. And I went into a treatment center for 28 days or whatever, and it was in the mountains of Georgia. And we were lumped together with, there were also all kinds of addictions there, drug and alcohol. And I remember because I'm sure they didn't have OA meetings there. They might have, but they had AA meetings. And I remember they took us all to an AA meeting one night, and I was freaking out because I knew from high school, I mean from TV, that when you went to an AA meeting, you had to say you were an alcoholic. And I didn't want to do that. And I was asking everybody, what should I do? What should I do? And finally, one of the counselors said, you know, these are a bunch of country Georgia men, old-timer alcoholics. Just say you're an alcoholic. You don't have to mean it. And I didn't like that at all. And you know, at this point, the drinking was pretty heavy, but I mean, it was pretty bad at that point. I would say, I mean, I was certainly binge drinking, probably 2-3 times a week. I got out of treatment and I started going to OA meetings in my hometown. I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama. And I didn't like those at all. I couldn't relate. I was, you know, here I was 18 years old. And to me it was, and this was just my perception at the time. I know now that it's probably wrong. And I know that OA helps a lot of people. But I just thought it was a bunch of fat women that didn't want to get well. And I just couldn't relate to these women. And I met a younger girl at one of the meetings that said, well, you know, I've been going to NA meetings. You should try one. It's the same 12 steps. You should try NA meetings with me. And so I did. I probably could count on one hand the number of times that I'd maybe experimented with pot. But I started going to NA meetings. And the next thing you know, I'm like sponsoring people. And I never cracked the book. I certainly never worked a step. I mean, it was a lot of young people. It was a very sick group. And I met my ex-husband there. And I met this guy, and he actually went back out, and then he came back, and I left with him, and that was my last time in through the doors of a 12-step meeting for many years. We drank, and when I hooked up with him, we drank a lot, and I ended up pregnant with my first daughter, and that would have been in 1990. I never went back to college at that point. I had not gone back to college at all. And I sort of, we ended up getting married. We were married less than a year. It was a very toxic relationship. And it's funny the things you forget. I remember one night we were both drinking, and I remembered this like just a few years ago with my husband now, who I've been married to for almost 22 years. We got into it one night, we were both drinking, and he had a gun. And I was holding my daughter, and he shot a hole through the ceiling of this house that we were renting that we had to fix. I mean, it got pretty crazy, but I forgot. It's just funny what you forget and what you remember that comes back to you later. But we ended up splitting up, and my parents said, you know what, come, you can move back in with us. We'll get you back in school. They really wanted me to get that degree. And so I did that, and I moved back in with my parents. And and you know, at this point, I'm a daily drinker. I'm pretty much during that marriage, it was definitely a daily thing. But I moved in with them, and I got in school, and I was making the dean's list. And I was partying on the weekends that I didn't have my daughter a lot. I mean, that point after my divorce, I lost a lot of weight, and I was going out a lot. Even on the weekends that I had her, I would, after she went to bed, I would go out. And probably, you know, there was a lot of one night stands, a lot of, you know, if you wanted to sleep with me, you must like me and maybe even love me, and this will work out. I know it will. And you know, you can imagine how that went. I had a few guys that I dated in there, but nothing terribly serious. And, in 94, would have been November of 94, I got my first and only DUI, and I was out with a girlfriend. And some boy that I liked called. He was at another bar, and so we hopped in the car, and I hit someone. I hit another car. I blew a .18 something. Back then, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as serious. I think my license was suspended for maybe 90 days. I had to do the classes and all that. And somehow I never got another DUI, and I couldn't tell you how. Because I would like to say that that was the last time I drank and drive, but it certainly wasn't. A few months later, I met my husband. He was working at a bar. He liked to drink as much as I did. And so we were a match made in heaven. But we're still married today, so that's a whole other story. But so I met him, and we started going out, and he got a DUI. On his way home from work at like 6 in the morning, he got a DUI, and that shook him up pretty bad. And he's like, I need to do something with my life other than wait tables. So his parents are good people, and they really wanted him to do something else. So he decided he wanted to join the military. So because he just got the DUI, he wanted to join the Army, but they were giving him a hard time, and he ended up in the Navy. And it was really one of the best things he could have ever done. The Navy's been really, really good for him. But so he ended up joining the Navy. He joined the day after my birthday, so it was August 30th of that year, and he went off to boot camp. And we were married a year later, roughly a year later, and got orders for San Diego. So we moved out to San Diego, and I've been in Alabama all my life. I haven't been anywhere else, and it was, you know, it was different, but it was good. It was good. But we drank every day. I remember one time right before we got married, I had a really bad, like, respiratory thing one night, and he came over, and I was still living with my parents, and I didn't feel like drinking. That usually didn't stop me. I'm sure I had a little bit, but not much. But he sat there and drank a 12-pack that night, you know, within a few hours. So he liked to drink like I did. And we pretty much drank beer. That was pretty much all we drank at that point. But I will tell you this, it was never really before 5. At this point, I managed to hold off until he got home from work. When we first got married, I worked for an attorney in San Diego. But I got pregnant within 6 months of us moving to San Diego. And I was able to stop drinking. I mean, as soon as I found out, and I found out pretty early on, I quit drinking. And I had, with my first pregnancy too, I had done that as well. Didn't do anything while I was pregnant with those anyway. My daughter, I went to about 41 weeks with her. She was born in February of 98. And she was born with severe congenital heart defects. She's got a lot of stuff wrong with her heart. And so she had surgery in a few days, and then she had surgery again when she was about 7 months old. And in the meantime, she was probably just a month or two old, and he deployed. He was a gunner's mate. He deployed on a destroyer that he was on out in San Diego. And, you know, I did pretty good. I took care of business. I was breastfeeding, I wasn't drinking, I was getting her to her doctor's appointments, I was being a mom to my oldest daughter. I was staying busy, and I was able to not drink for probably, it seems like a long time, but it may have been just like 6 months or so, I think, when he came home from deployment. And the best part, the night I found out I was pregnant, we took a home pregnancy test with my daughter, he quit, and he didn't pick up for 3 years. He quit drinking, just quit. And so I imagine that was a really fun time for him, but when I was drinking all those years and he wasn't, well, he eventually started drinking again, if that tells you anything. But so we had my, you know, he came back, and I started drinking again, and she was really underweight, especially before her second surgery. So they had her on formula pretty soon. So. You know, and I went right back to where I was, drinking daily. Like, at this point, still not before 5. I wasn't a day drinker yet, but it was still, you know, it was bad. And at some point, I remember her cardiologist used to say, when are you guys going to have another one? You know, you only got like a 5% chance of having another child with a heart defect. And we wanted to have at least one more, so we started trying when she was probably a couple years old, and I got pregnant. And when I was about 16 weeks pregnant, I got a call from the Naval Hospital that some of my blood work had come back funny, and that they wanted to just check my dates. They thought I probably had my dates off. So I go into, they do a sonogram and tell me that there's a problem with the baby's heart. And, you know, that relationship with God that I didn't really have, well, I was praying. I was praying it, you know, constantly, just give me a healthy baby. I've tried to do right by, you know, my kids, God. I promise I'll do anything, just give me a healthy baby. And so they tell me something's wrong with the heart. So I freak out and I call my daughter's cardiologist, and they get me in the next day and do an echo, a fetal echo. And they looked at me and said, the baby has AV canal defect, which is almost exclusively found in babies with Down syndrome. And my heart just dropped. I mean, I was just like, oh my God. And I went home and I crawled in bed for a few days, and I didn't know what I was gonna do, and we didn't know what we were gonna do. But we ended up deciding to give that baby a chance. Mm-hmm. And Arthur, we call him AJ, was born in September of 2001, 9 days after 9/11. In the meantime, my husband has decided, he's always wanted to be a Navy SEAL, but he's decided that, he'll compromise and be on the bomb squad, be Navy. He wants to do Navy EOD. And of course, this was before 9/11, so that seems reasonably safe. I mean, I think, you know, I just didn't envision him being as busy as he soon would become. But he went to school in Florida for a year, and we moved in back in with my parents for a year, who were now in Birmingham, Alabama. UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham, has great cardiac surgeons, and there was one that was, he's since retired, but he was really well known, and he ended up operating on both babies because Bridget had to have another heart surgery, and then AJ had to have surgery. He had surgery when he was about 4 months old, and they were able to do almost a complete repair on him. But in the meantime, Bridget's not talking, and I've long since suspected there's something going on there. I got a lot of, you know, when I would take her to the doctor, well, it's probably just her delay from the surgeries and stuff. But she is now 20 years old and nonverbal autistic. And AJ is Down syndrome and autistic. And so I quit talking to God a long time ago because he doesn't listen to my prayers. So I had put him on a shelf. It wasn't that I didn't believe in God or even that I was just mad at God. I just thought, I'm just not one of those people he listens to. And whether that was because I thought I didn't deserve it or I had done so many bad things that, you know, I couldn't be forgiven, I don't know. But I just didn't even pray anymore. And it was many years before I prayed again. But, you know, I would like to tell you that with AJ, I didn't drink much. I think maybe in the whole pregnancy there was 3 or 4 beers. But that was something that I never would have done before. But I just kind of had this mindset of what else could go wrong? You know, what's this going to matter? And after he was born, he had issues latching on and with he was actually in the hospital for a month because we couldn't get him to eat. We couldn't get him to latch onto even a bottle. But about the time that he decided that he might want to really try that breastfeeding thing, I was done because I wanted to drink. And I felt guilty because I was going to drink. At that point, it wasn't a choice anymore. I mean, just to get through. And I had people around me that, like, sort of, I mean, because when we were living with mom and dad, it was like they didn't really say anything because my mom always kind of had this, well, I would drink if I were you too kind of attitude. And I didn't get usually like falling down drunk or anything. I mean, I think it was just me. I drank a lot, but I wouldn't necessarily be making a fool out of myself yet. He graduated from EOD school, from dive school and all that, and he got orders for Little Creek in Norfolk. So we found a house in actually Chesapeake. We bought a house in Chesapeake, and we moved in there. And, you know, it was good. I mean, we always had a lot of love in our house, I think. I mean, it progressively got worse as the drinking got worse. At some point after AJ was born, when he was a few months old, my husband started drinking again. And I honestly, for many, many years, and even after I got sober, I thought he was an alcoholic. But I think He's a hard drinker, and he just drank to deal with me. Because why not? I mean, I can't even imagine what it was like to live with me. Because there was a lot of fighting. I can tell you there was a lot of love in the house, but I can, if I think about it, there was a lot of fighting. A lot of, you know, the first deployment he did to Iraq was great. I mean, he loved it. He loved his team. He came back like on a high. But there was a couple more successive deployments that there was definitely some PTSD when he got home. And a lot of resentment, and of course, I was full of resentment at that point. And at this point, I've known for many years that I'm probably an alcoholic. I mean, I would joke about it and call it a functioning alcoholic for a while, but I've known for probably 10 years that, and probably a sneaking suspicion back there somewhere that I'm not going to be able to give this up. Because I never really could try. I would say, okay, tomorrow, or maybe I would, you know, maybe Monday, then I'm gonna stop this. I'm getting old, you know, I'm getting older. I had another child, by the way. My son Aiden was born a couple of years after AJ. He was a surprise. And I maybe drank a couple of times with him, but it was the breastfeeding. Like, it's this kind of thing where you feel guilty, you feel like society's gonna judge you for not nursing, but at the same time, I'm not giving up the alcohol. And he had issues, he has developmental issues today, and that's something I gotta live with, if that's on me or not. And a lot of it, he had low muscle tone, I remember that, and I remember knowing that. So at some point, I think he was about 4 months, I said, I just quit nursing because I'm not gonna give up the alcohol. Normal women would. They would just, you know, they would just give it up, or they would pump, you know, if they wanted to, once or twice a week, but not me. And so Sean does a few more deployments. My oldest daughter is getting to be a teenager, and she's rebellious, and you know, all the stuff that comes with having a teenage daughter. She's also, my first husband has passed away from addiction since then. So he had a lot of issues, and so we're fighting, we're butting heads a lot. And plus, she knows the deal. She knows what's going on. She knows mom can't quit drinking, and dad's gone a lot, and she has a lot of responsibility. If I want to be honest, she had a lot of responsibility on her as far as the other kids. And so, you know, at some point one night my husband and I both had a lot to drink. And it was when probably the PTSD was at its worst. And we got into it. And he doesn't remember any of it. I could tell you that he said some pretty awful things about my oldest daughter. And she heard everything. And the next morning, I guess she woke up and came downstairs, and he was sitting in his recliner, and on the table next to him was his gun and some bullets. And so she took off out of there. She called CPS. And so we had CPS come and visit us that day, which rightfully so. He actually moved out for probably a month because I didn't know what was going to happen after that. It was really bad. I didn't give up drinking. I wasn't gonna do that. He probably would have, because I know now he's one of those who can just quit. But you know, I started watching a lot of intervention. I think that's common. I hear that a lot. I would make myself, you know, those big plastic, big gold cups of. At this point. Yeah, I'm probably starting to drink vodka because I'm trying different things. You know, those last several years, I went to wine, I went to scotch. I was watching a lot of Mad Men, and so I went through a scotch. I don't know what, it's like it said in what you were reading. I don't know if you got to that point in it, but, you know, we tried everything. And I wouldn't necessarily promise myself I was going to quit anymore, but I would say, well, tonight when I drink, I'm gonna wait 30 minutes between every drink, and I'm gonna drink a glass of water. And that way I won't get as drunk. Well, we all know what happens with that. Or I would say, well, I won't start drinking until 9, and I'll go to bed at like 11. But we all know what happens with that. You're up all night, or at least I would be up all night drinking as much as I could. Like they knew me at the neighborhood ABC store, like, and I would go in there and I would, in my head, I would be like, well, for all they know, I have a lot of parties and I have to get a lot of alcohol for that. Or I started going to in Chesapeake, we have a Coast Guard exchange. They had the best deals on liquor. And it's not uncommon to see people in an exchange with just buggies full of alcohol. So I wouldn't really get noticed as much there. But, you know, at the end, it was vodka. And I didn't start drinking during the day until my daughter came back from, after that big blow up with my husband, she went to Texas. I called my mom and I said, my parents had since relocated to Texas to be near my sister. I said, it was summer. I said, can Katie, we had a huge, thing here. Can Katie please come and stay with you for a couple weeks? I'll fly her out there. Well, Katie decided she didn't want to come home. And she got there and she told them everything, and you don't really want your parents and your sister and everybody knowing everything, but here we are, they did. So they didn't make her come home. So she ended up going to school for a year in Texas. She graduated from high school there and we went for the graduation. And then she went to Texas State for a year. My husband actually signed over his GI Bill to her. And after that year, she decided she wanted to come back to Virginia. So she did. So she moved back in with us. And I was working a job at this point. I worked at a high-end shoe store in Chesapeake. And I'd sort of gotten a tentative promotion. Sean was deployed. And I got a call at work one day that she was suicidal and that I needed to come home. Her boyfriend called me. So I booked it home and she was. And she was going to watch the kids for me. It was summer. She was going to watch the kids for me while I worked. And that wasn't going to happen. I had to call 911 and she got put in Virginia Beach site where I would be just a few years later. But and so I had to quit my job on the spot. I just had to say, I'm sorry, I can't, and I did. And that was when it just really took off. It was summer and what the hell? I just started drinking all day. Sorry, I didn't mean it. But I just started drinking all day long, vodka, all day. At first it was probably not before noon, but then when it was awesome. I remember I lost a lot of weight and I joked that it was the vodka diet before my husband came home. And at this point I just know I'm poisoning myself. I just know I'm dying. I went to the doctor a couple of years before I got sober because I thought I'm gonna go to the doctor because I didn't like going to the doctor because I knew what they were gonna say, and I'm gonna get all my blood work done and everything and they're gonna tell me how bad it is and then I'm gonna quit. That's gonna be what makes me quit because I don't wanna die. So I went to the doctor and I got a call from the nurse and she said, well, you have a fatty liver. And I said, well, what does that mean? And she said, now what I told people so many times that she said that I started to believe in myself was, well, it means that you don't eat right and you don't exercise enough and you drink a little too much. But what she really said was you drink too much. The doctor says you gotta slack off on the drinking. And I did. I quit for 6 weeks. It's the last time before I got sober that I can remember quitting for any length of time more than a day. And I won't say I was miserable. I probably was, but I was, I just didn't do anything. I just went to work and just, it was almost like I was a robot. Like I just get through this day. And there was never a thought in my head of I won't drink again. It was just, so I quit for 6 weeks, got my blood work tested again. It was better. And I never went back to that doctor. I started, I picked it right back up. And, at one point, maybe on that deployment, my daughter and I got into it, my oldest daughter, and she was pouring my vodka out in the lawn. And I was freaking out, just like on TV, when you see people, alcoholics doing that, I was like, no. And so I went to an AA meeting basically for her and picked up a white chip. And that was, I didn't go to any more meetings. It was a couple more years before I would finally darken the doors of AA again. But I'm watching a lot of intervention. Anyway, I digress. I'm watching a lot of intervention, and I'm, you know, because I'm not as bad as that. For a long time, I wasn't as, and then I started to get as bad as that. And so I didn't watch as much intervention, but I knew that treatment was going to probably be what it would take for me. And I'm starting to realize that. And that scares me because I took care of the finances and I wasn't like especially good at it. And we had a lot of credit card debt that maybe my husband didn't know about. And I didn't want him to find out about that. And also I just thought things would fall apart without me. So, the thought of treatment really scared me, although it sort of sounded really good too. At some point it started to sound really good. So, he came back from that deployment and things got really bad and we were fighting a lot. And I mean, I will say, the PTSD wasn't really an issue. That last deployment was like to Bahrain and I don't think that was really an issue anymore. I think it was just both of us drinking so much and him watching his wife die, basically. I looked terrible. I was bloated. My face was red all the time. I was mad all the time. I was in a rage all the time. I said horrible things to my children. I passed out. I would be passed out when he got home from work. He would walk through the door, you know, and I did that crazy thing where I would go to the Coast Guard Exchange or wherever, get a bunch of, and I was drinking like probably the big, I think it's a gallon, but probably at least a half a gallon a day. And it would be where I would be like, oh, well, he's going to know I drank that much, so I'll get out this new bottle and hide this one. And then he's going to know I drank some, so I need to drink some of this one. And he would walk through the door and he would, you know, I don't know who says this, but they say you can't smell vodka, but you can smell vodka. And so we get into this one fight, would have been January 17th, 2013. And he called me a liar about something, I can't remember what. I'm sure it was accurate. I'm sure I'd lied about a lot of things. And I hit him, and I hit him a few times, and he let me. And then at some point, things calmed down. Not so much calmed down as, you know, when you go at it and you're just like, and he said, well, were you serious about getting help? And I said, yeah, because I'd mentioned, I think in some, probably in a drunk that, well, you can just quit, but I'm going to need help. And so he said, well, then we're going to go get you some help. So the next day I went to Chesapeake General. He's kind of, being in the military, he's very paranoid about that kind of stuff. So he said, well, you're going to go to the emergency room and tell them that you're having chest pains. And then when you get back there, you can tell them that, you know. And so that's what I did. And I got back there and, you know, that's one of the first questions they always ask you is how much do you drink? And for the first time ever, I was honest. And I didn't really know how much I drank. I just said, I drink a lot. And I said, do you think that could be what's causing my chest pains that I wasn't having? And she was like, absolutely, the anxiety and all that could be. So that she said, well, we have a addiction specialist or whatever counselor here, so we'll get him in here. He's busy, but we'll get him in here and talk to you. And they sent this really young guy in there, and very sweet, and he said he wasn't an addict because I are an alcoholic, but he said he ran in his family. And he said, well, how much do you drink? And I had some time to think about it. And so I told him. And I started just following. And I think that's when I surrendered. Because it's the first time that I'd ever been honest. And honestly, after that point, I don't ever remember having an honest desire to drink again. I just started following. And he talked to me a little bit more. And he said, well, you definitely qualify. So we're going to try and get you in a detox. So they did. They got me in Virginia Beach detox. And I ended up only going to detox for 5 days. I thought that I would be in treatment for like a year, but I guess I was just done. I don't know. I mean, I go to this detox facility and I didn't have delirium tremors or any. I thought I was going to have seizures and all this, and they didn't really put me on any medication. I just slept a lot the first couple of days. And then I got up and I started, you know, going to meetings. And when you're in that, if you've been in Virginia Beach Detox or any detox, I guess, there's a lot of people that have to be in there. And I would get really frustrated with them. They were court ordered or whatever. And like, I really wanted this. But I picked up a white chip at a meeting there that they one of the groups brought in. And this awesome lady came and talked to us, a recovering alcoholic, came and told her story. And I remember afterwards I went up to her and I said, I think we were separated at birth. It was the first recovering alcoholic I heard. It was the first story I heard. And I just could relate to so much of it. And I said, will you be my sponsor? And she said, I think I said temporary sponsor, which I know I did because I was afraid she would say no if I said sponsor, because who would want to deal with all this for on a on anything other than a temporary basis? But she said, yes, here's my number, call me. And so I got out of detox on a Wednesday. I went to a meeting that night. I called her on the way home, and we made plans to meet at her home group before her home group the next day, on Thursday, which her home group was downtown, Young and Sober. I actually got sober in Norfolk. And we did that. We met every Thursday for, you know, reading the book and going through the steps. And I went to more than 90 meetings in 90 days, I'm sure. And I just loved it. And I still love it. I mean, am I on a pink cloud anymore? I don't know, but alcohol, AA saved my life and gave me an amazing life. I have a niece that on my husband's side, but we've been close since we met. Like I said, we've been married 22 years, and she's about 10 years younger than me. And she called about a month ago and said that her husband was going into treatment for drinking, and he's had like 5 attacks of pancreatitis. So I kind of suspected, and I knew they liked to drink, but they know I'm in recovery. And she called and told me, and she said, but I think I might be an alcoholic, but I'm not sure. I'm going to go see an addiction counselor and maybe go to a meeting while he's in treatment. And then a couple weeks later, she called me and she said, he's doing great. And I know now I'm an alcoholic, and I just left my first meeting. And I got to tell her, you are so brave, because that's the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life, is finally admit that I'm an alcoholic and I need help and I can't do this by myself. And to tell her what a life I have today. Because I thought, for years I thought, I'm either going to die, this is going to kill me, or I'll end up in AA. And I didn't know that much about AA, other than what I saw on TV. And I thought, it's going to suck. I'm going to drink every drop that I possibly can and squeeze every bit of pleasure, even though it was anything but pleasure at the end, out of this. I had to do that to make it worth it, to maybe give AA a chance. And I honestly thought meetings would just be us sitting around complaining about how we can't drink and just white knuckling and just, you know, and I couldn't have been more wrong. I have such an amazing life today. We're still together. When I first got sober, I thought my husband was an alcoholic. I remember many times thinking, you know, just being so resentful at him, because he, I don't know, didn't do the dishes or whatever. I mean, just silly things. And I used to talk to myself a lot and say, okay, he's not gonna have done this, so you just don't get mad. Just prepare yourself and don't get mad. Instead of doing that, I started talking to God. So that was one thing my sponsor said, was she asked me if I prayed. And I was like, no, let me tell you a little bit about that. I don't pray, God doesn't listen to me. And she said, well, pretend. Just in the morning, say, please keep me sober. And at night, thank you for keeping me sober. I just want you to, and I did anything she told me. I mean, I did that to the letter. When I have sponsees now that, or my sponsees have been pretty good, but when I hear about sponsees that don't, I'm just like, if she would have told me to, I heard somebody say, carry around a 50-pound rock, I would have done that. If she would have, you know, this is going to help keep you sober. So, you know, I started praying, and I'll be darned if I didn't start, like, having a connection with some higher power. So I started praying more. And instead of talking to myself, I would talk to God, because I don't really get great answers when I talk to myself. I don't get, like, you know, the support I need when I talk to myself. So I started talking to God. And I just I have like a phenomenal life today. I lost my dad on Father's Day. And if you've lost a parent, which I'm sure some of you have, that's like really, really hard. But I was able to get through it sober, and I was able to be of service to my family instead of a wreck. And my sister, my older sisters, who can't get along to save their lives, they just never have, and they never will, probably. But anything's possible, though. They call me for advice, and I remember I hadn't been sober long. My oldest sister called me and said, "You're just so zen these days. You're just so, you know." I just try and just put one foot in front of the other and be of service, and I'm not trying to control everything. I got my real estate license this year, which is something I've been wanting to do for a really long time. I just got it, but I've got it. I'm in it with an agency, so I'm starting a new career. My husband's going to retire from the Navy in about a year, and hopefully that'll be sort of up and running. I just have a really good life today, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I can show up for my kids. My daughter and I didn't have a relationship. My oldest daughter and I didn't have a relationship for about 3 years. She's got her issues. I don't know if it's alcohol or if it's something else or if it's something else altogether. She's got a lot of resentment, rightfully so, at me and my husband. But she's made a lot of mistakes too. And she called me a couple weeks ago just to say hi and to say she was sorry for everything. And it was really good to hear her voice. And not to be like, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with this, you know, and how am I going to save her, and how am I, you know, I just took it for what it was, and it was nice. It was nice to talk. It was wonderful to talk to her because I think about her a lot. And I don't know. I guess that's all. I'm just grateful to be here. So grateful. I never spoke in front of people, and I certainly would have never imagined myself telling my story and being sober for almost 5 years and. Which really isn't that long, but that's huge. I couldn't go a day for years. Couldn't go a day without drinking. And now, you know, I was telling my niece, she was like, "Well, I think I'm gonna have to switch grocery stores because I would get a bottle of wine every day, and I can't go to the grocery store." And I could tell her it will not always be like that, and mean it. If you do this, and I mean, all I can do is tell her what I did: get a sponsor, work the steps, go to meetings. You do this, it will be, I go to the grocery store now. Our groceries, we have a Food Lion, you know, 2 minutes from the house. The bread's on one side and the beer's on the other. And I rarely look at the beer, but occasionally my sister might come into town and she likes, of course, really expensive beer. So I might get a six pack of that. and I'll be like, "What does it cost now? Like, I just got out of a time machine or something. Like, what do they have now?" And they've got some crazy stuff out there. But it's just not even anything that I think about. So I'm going to keep doing this because I don't want to go back to that. I woke up every morning just hopeless, just utterly devoid of any kind of hope, just knowing that I was going to do the same thing that day that I did the day before, and that not only was it not ever going to get better, I wasn't going to switch to wine and suddenly learn how to control it. I wasn't going to start drinking water in between drinks and somehow learn to control it. I wasn't going to be like my grandfather. I have a grandfather that apparently when he was young was just a hellion, and he since passed away, but he was an awesome grandfather, you know, and everybody would talk about how he used to be, and I think, well, that'll happen for me one day. I'll get old enough and I'll have everything the way it's supposed to be. I'll have the house and the kids and the you know, the husband and all of that, and I just won't want to do it anymore. And I knew that was never going to happen, that it was just going to get worse and it was going to kill me. And the doctor told me in treatment, he said, "I have not seen liver enzymes this high in a long time." And he works at a treatment. I mean, that's all he does. And I, you know what I said? I said, "Thank you," because I needed to hear that. So my liver enzymes aren't high anymore, and I managed to, he said, "The good news is you can stop this. You just can never drink again." And so I did what you guys told me to do, and I have a good life today, and I'm really glad to be here. So thanks for having me.